Hello, everyone. It's Friday, the 18th of February, and welcome to episode 93 of the Kite Podcast with me, Ben Eagle.
And me, Will Evans. Now, if you haven't already watched it, you will no doubt have heard about the BBC Panorama programme aired on BBC One earlier this week, exposing undercover footage filmed on a dairy farm in Wales, whose Red Tractor certification has since been terminated. Many have taken to social media since, calling the programme sensationalist and hugely unrepresentative. The BBC, on the other hand, has said that a range of views and opinions were heard. But what impact has the programme had, and where do we go from here? Well, on the show today to discuss all this, we have Kite's managing partner John Allen, renowned dairy commentator Ian Potter, who appeared on the Panorama programme, and as always, we're also joined by everybody's favourite dairy market analyst, Chris Walkland. Chris, over to you for the Milk Market Report. Where are you this week?
Well, I've broken myself into thousands of different pieces today, and I'm bringing you my report from all of the thousands of farms across the country who don't treat their cows in the way that was depicted on Panorama this week, and who wish to distance themselves from the scene shown, a point that alarmingly the cattle vet on the programme failed to make clear, and in fact, as far as the shocking hoist scene was concerned, said was widespread across the industry. And I'm here with a Mr. Potter, I see. Now, I've never heard of this man, but I've done my research, and I see he was a poor, struggling milk quota broker in his day who offered his trading services to farmers on a not-for-profit basis. Splendid stuff. I also see our guest is the current number one in the who's who of the UK dairy industry in two categories. Most wanted by a few people offering a reward for his head on a plate, and least wanted by everyone else. Apart from that is a few devoted fans who formally celebrate an official We Miss Ian Potter Day every year. It's a sort of Burns Night-esque Potter Love Fest. So put the date in your diary, everyone, and join in. February the 31st. Anyway, it's good to have you on the show.
Don't laugh and encourage you.
It's good to have you on the show, Mr. Potter, to talk about that programme. But first, my market report. So the GDT posted another great result this week with another 4% rise, taking the average commodity price to top $4,800, which we haven't seen for 8 years. And I reckon the commodities convert to a price of over 42 pence now, which is on a par with EU and New Zealand futures price returns. In Europe land, it was an across-the-board green week where the majority of commodities increased in price and none fell. French powders were the biggest movers, with whole milk powder up 100 euros a tonne to 4,600 and skim slightly less than that to 3,700 euros. And the interesting thing here is that some traders have been saying for weeks, or rather hoping for weeks, that quarter two prices would come down. And instead, it looks as if they're going up. Butter's average price has ticked over 6,000 euros to as high as 6,100. So again, butter and skim equates to 42.5 pence in a milk price term. And the futures continue to climb too. Butter and skim, they're up another 60 euros this week. And prices there are similar to the real market price. There's still stability with cream and butter in the UK. Creams are 225 to 230 per kilo, butter £5,000 a tonne. But the big news of the day is cheese. Again, on the back of curd prices now hitting 5,000 euros. Last week, I said the spot mile price had increased by £100 to £4,000 a tonne, first time it's ever hit that threshold. And this week, some traders are saying it has gone to 4,100. That's £650 higher than its previous record before the prices started to move back in November. And while mild is big news, it's not the biggest news of the day. Mozzarella prices have soared to as high as £3,790 a tonne for quarter two, I hear. So if your name's Dylan and you work for Glanbia, I'd put your phone on silent this weekend because you're going to be getting a fair few calls about you-know-what. Spot milk is the same as it was in the mid-40 pence range, but no one has mentioned 50p to me this week. So that's it. Now to our discussion, and possibly the most sober one we've had on this podcast to date. And I look forward to seeing exactly how much knowledge of the industry this Mr. Potter actually has. Apparently, he used to be a commentator on the industry, writing a regular article in a magazine. But when a new kid on the block came along called Walkland, he gave up and ran for the hills. Take it away, Bill and Ben and Becky, your very own little weed.
Oh, blimey, Chris. The chives are everywhere this morning. Thank you for that. Before we start, I think we should give Ian a right to reply on some of those from Chris. Ian, have you got anything to say to Chris?
No, I've got to admit, I'm speechless.
Never.
I'm delighted to have the badge of the most wanted and the least wanted. All I'm concerned about is that they get my name right, and then I'm happy.
Right, let's turn to it. Time to talk about Panorama. I mean, all three of you, John, Ian and Chris, you were all contacted for opinions as part of the research process for the programme. And ultimately, Ian, you were featured in the final edit. Now that it's all been aired, everything's been said, what did you think? Your start of a 10. John, can we start with you?
Yeah, well, first of all, welcome, Ian. Great to see you. Always got along very well with you. Yeah, it was very sobering because I was late back. And when I got back home then, I noticed on our WhatsApp that, we have an internal one, and all the support staff were actually saying they've been watching it and they were pretty sickened and upset. And that actually hit me because I thought, something's really, we were consulted, but I think we'll talk about the media savvy bit about dealing with BBC in a minute. But when I watched the catch up, then, you had to say that actually, it made you ashamed because there's people in the industry, to be fair, who are just letting in own goals. I mean, we've all heard about protect and promote. Well, we had a program on a few weeks ago about promotion with AHDB and them doing what we'd like them to do, which is promoting our industry, doing a great job. And then we go and have an own goal. And I do understand we'll talk about, how the BBC portray this. But I don't think the excuse can be made, it's all woke BBC and they're all vegans. And, we've got to accept it. And we've got to think about how we have a wake-up call culturally about our industry. So that's why it'll be good to talk about that today.
Okay. And John said that, of course, we will talk about how it was all put together a bit later. But initial thoughts from you.
I thought it was wrong of Panorama to try and make a direct connection between the footage that we saw, which there's no defence for, and it didn't just involve one member of staff, it involved more than one member of staff on that farm, but to connect that footage to the milk price paid by Freshways was wrong. It was factually wrong, and it was wrong to do it. And I'll tell you why it's wrong. Because Freshways didn't start to pick up milk from that farm until September. That farmer had not even received a payment from Freshways at the time that footage was taken. For that reason, it was wrong, but it's wrong to connect the two together. And that was what Panorama wanted to do. That's what they achieved. And that was where they were wrong in my book.
Right. And Chris, you've been quite vocal on Twitter over the last few days.
I thought Panorama tried to make a balanced program by interviewing the other farmers and bringing in other aspects of the industry, but all of the positives would have been completely wiped out by the shocking footage and the emotion of that footage. I would counter Ian's point by saying that, and it's a point I tried to make to Panorama, that there is a link between the milk price and animal welfare, in that the more money a farmer gets, the more a farmer will invest in welfare via buildings and concrete and mattresses and stalls and those cow brush things. So there is a link with the milk price. I wasn't made aware that the farmer had only just joined Freshways until after the program. And I think that is a fair point.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, just on the question of balance, the BBC have been quoted as saying that a range of views and opinions were heard. How balanced do you think it was?
I think there were a range of opinions. But as with all these programs, and I can say this, you know, I was filmed for 3.5 hours.
Yeah. Yeah.
I probably didn't appear on there for more than 30 seconds in total. Right. And that's because some of the questions I was asked, the answers that I gave weren't the ones that were required. For instance, when they talked about, do I agree that the health and welfare is affected when milk price is low? I answered yes. But I answered yes from the point of view of the family, the farmer and the workers and everybody associated. That's the unseen pressure to the health and welfare of the family, because there are many farmers in this country who, looking after their animals runs parallel with looking after the family. And for some, they look after the animals better. The animals take priority because they can't look after themselves. So that was where I, health and welfare, but that wasn't the answer that was wanted. And that's why it didn't appear, I believe. They started with the footage and they wanted to make a program out of that footage, and they succeeded. So the conclusion was already there and they worked backwards.
Before we move on, Ian, sorry, John, I'm interested in, clearly 3.5 hours is a long time. What were some of those other questions that they were asking? And critically, also, and this is just with an editing sort of mind in view, were any of those questions asked you 2, 3, maybe 4 times?
No, the questions weren't asked several times. Most of my questions were asked, an odd one might have been asked a second time in a different way.
Okay.
But most of them were only one-hit questions, and I gave my answer. Obviously, to say it was 3.5 hours of filming, that's probably not true. There were 3.5 hours on site.
Yeah.
Most of that time they were interviewing and filming and gathering information. And to be fair to Panorama, they did a pretty good job of fact-finding and gathering their information before the programme.
Yeah, they did. I would agree with that.
I can't fault them on that. There was only a couple of questions that I was asked about Freshways. So I couldn't even say that Panorama were Freshways focused. They asked me a lot about standards and the need to, you know, have higher standards. I actually don't believe we need higher standards. What I do believe is that we need to drag the bottom up or get the bottom out, not lift the standards higher for those that are at the top already or achieving the standards. That clearly wasn't something that was aired, as was the fact that, you know, I did highlight that, in my opinion, Red Tractor has been guilty of being one of the base standards, and it's processors that have been driving higher standards. And there was lots to discuss about that. We discussed about retailers, about the price of milk, and how the different sectors of the industry worked. So there were a lot of other questions that you'd have liked to have seen aired, but they didn't lead to the conclusion.
Just come in, because they did consult us, and we're very wary of media, because the trouble is as Ian said, and it was fairly clear they had an agenda. We only shared information that's in the public domain, and the point is that I think if as an industry you don't realise that there's people out there who are very capable and very professional. And it is right that they probably had people wanting to pull down the industry, but that's no excuse. And the problem is that if you don't realise that and you're not prepared for it, you're going to damage your industry. It's a bit like, you know, being a defender and running down the pitch and poking the goal and hitting the ball in your own net. You know, you've just ruined everything for everybody by actually allowing those things to happen. I understand for the individuals, it's going to be hard because they will be potentially put under stress, and we can appreciate sometimes things get distorted. And I do empathize with those sorts of people sometimes if they get dragged into these situations. But that's the way the world is. And if we don't understand that, you know, we're being very naive. And I think there's some big naivety about some of the people who were on that program. And you've got, not you, Ian, you're pretty savvy, but, you know, some of the others, I mean, you know, really, they just walked straight into a mire, didn't they?
Do you think that there's, so the BBC, like everyone, I saw that footage and I've thought about it a lot since. And, you know, although I don't milk cows anymore, I grew up on a dairy farm and I live in a dairy farmer area. All my friends and neighbours are dairy farms. And do you think there's a danger that we focus too much on the BBC and not on the issue itself? Because that's what Panorama are there for, to expose things. I mean, you look at sort of this whole series on the BBC about rogue builders, for example, and yet there's plenty of really good builders out there. You know, they're not picking on farming. They're just, you know, this is, Panorama exists to investigative journalism and expose things, and that's what they do. So do you think that by focusing too much on the BBC and sort of think, well, they're picking on us, and it takes away from the issue itself?
Brilliant point, Will. Totally agree. Mm. Yeah. Don't know what you think, Chris and Ian.
The wake-up call is for every dairy farmer. And there are dairy farmers who say to me that, you know, we've got an inspection from whatever body, and they go around and they make sure that they're fully compliant on that day the inspection takes place.
Yeah.
But we have to get into the mode that the food industry in general, anybody that's processing meat, processing any food, works on the fact that they have to be 365-day compliant and they can have a spot check at any time.
Yeah.
Whereas we have some farmers who think they only need to be compliant on the day of the inspection, which farcically is always given advance notice on, unless it's a spontaneous one for someone that's been flagged up, which evidently I think Red Tractor have said on this farm there have been before unannounced inspections. Well, I still do not understand why Red Tractor and others have to give announced inspections to everyone, or feel the need to say, you know, you are under surveillance, but what days can we come? Because I know that farmers play with them, as, you know, you can't come on a Monday and a Wednesday and a Thursday. You can come on a Sunday, actually. We're always around. And some of them play games. And these are the people that are not 365-day compliant and need the unannounced inspections.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ian, can I just go back to something you said earlier, where you mentioned that we need to bring the bottom up, the bottom of the industry up. Whose responsibility is that? Is that down to other farmers to say? Because we all know that for years there's been those farms that, and you, unfortunately, usually on the side of a main road and by a school or something, that kind of, you drive past them and you sort of wince a bit and you think, oh, I wish, you know, wish that was a bit tidier. Or, you know, whose responsibility is that, do you think?
For some time, I've debated with Red Tractor over the need for a confidential, call it a call line, snitch line, whatever. They've got one, but I don't think that Red Tractor are trusted to run that properly. I think what we need is somewhere that people, public, processors, neighbouring farmers can actually report incidents. You know, I've come across award-winning farms where, without any doubt at all, on the day that the award was assessed, they ticked all the boxes. Goodness me, are they left wanting the following days? And neighbouring farmers, no. People working on the farm, no. Contractors going on the farm, no. I've had contractors contact me. But it needs to be one place that can try and then go to somebody like Red Tractor, go to the processor or whoever's auditing these farms and say, right, we've got sufficient evidence here and we're quite sure you need to go in there. And then they need to report back to that person so that they can go back and say, I can confirm that, you know, things have changed or what's happened. So we take responsibility for tidying, putting our own house in order, because, you know, that programme, yeah, it was BBC One, but it has, to a certain extent, I just feel at the moment that it set us back a bit, and it's cost everybody, including Freshways, you know, it's done reputational damage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
John, how do you think Red Tractor handled all of this? They've now since terminated the farmer's assurance, it seems. Is that drastic, or what do you think?
Well, they've obviously potentially taken away somebody's livelihood, and so that's pretty serious. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, Chris will probably have some views about that because he knows a bit more about it than I do on that. Just picking up on Ian's points, remember there's two sides. I think in a way you get moments like this, and let's be honest, you know, these things will never ever, it'll always be the same. You know, I've been around long enough to know that, but you've probably almost got to use this as a moment to try and actually bring about some form of culture change in terms of calling out, because there are very good farmers out there trying to do a great job, and you let them, and when things like this happen, you're letting the side down. And you know, and yeah, you can have reasons. There's always reasons, but actually, you know, I think Red Tractor, I think culturally, I think there's a lot of farmers who are pretty negative about Red Tractor, and they pull it down and they cheat on it, like Ian said. They try and cheat, and are Red Tractor complicit in that? If you read through the standards of Red Tractor, Red Tractor should deliver. I mean, people are very dismissive about the standards, but the standards are recent ones. But I've heard farmers and senior farmers moaning about, oh, well, we've got to do that, we've got to do this. Well, when you get an issue like this, why weren't you there? Why weren't you trying to understand all of that? And the other final thing, just to add on Red Tractor, the amount of penny pinching that goes on in terms of how you try and get those inspections done and how everybody expects it all to be done for very little, that is not a good idea either. I mean, I've got fairly strong views about that, but that's another topic for another day, I think. I want to hear Chris and what he's got to say.
I think the interesting point to me, and we haven't been in this situation before, I don't think. We're in a situation now where Red Tractor is inspector, judge, jury, and in this case, executioner. And who decided? Did one person within Red Tractor decide? Did two people? Did the board decide? Who made the decision? And what is the appeals process? Under the rules of law in the UK, everybody, no matter what they have done, has the right to a trial with an independent jury of 12 people. So what were the procedures of Red Tractor? What if there is another incident, heaven forbid, but it's a third as bad, the footage is a third as bad on this farm, and it wasn't shown on Panorama, it was shown on social media? Would Red Tractor say, we're suspending you for a month, Mr. Dairy Farmer? Well, a month at the current cost levels is enough to put the farm out of business. Where is the line now with Red Tractor's ability to destroy a business, to put a business out of business? And you look at the appeals, you know, 30 days. There's a 30-day threshold, I think there is, for an appeal. That's no good for a dairy farmer. You know, it needs to be 3 days. And Who decides on the jury? One of the key things we have not said so far, and I think this is critical, is that the farmer was not involved in any of the footage. He was not there when the malpractice took place. If he was, and he was involved in that malpractice, it would be game over for that farmer, and rightly so. But he wasn't. The police, 40 years ago or whenever, did not try and close down the business that the Yorkshire Ripper worked for when the Yorkshire Ripper killed a dozen prostitutes. We are not trying to shut down the Metropolitan Police because of one rogue, rapist, murdering officer and a few racist, misogynist coppers. And yet, in this instance, Red Tractor are shutting down a business because, on the basis of what we know, there are some rogue employees. And rogue employees who were filmed by an undercover reporter, possibly being paid by an animal rights organization.
I have to say, I agree with everything you've said there, Chris. I find the whole sort of snap judgment from Red Tractor really deeply worrying, because whilst I broadly support Red Tractor and I see the need for it, and I think it's important in the entire farming system, you're right. Who appointed them judge, jury, and executioner? Because, and it seems like this has happened extraordinarily quickly. It seems like almost like they've looked at what's happening on social media, and it's gone from there. And that's no way to run an assurance scheme, and it's certainly no way to judge an entire farmer's business and livelihood based on it. I'm not saying you can't take it seriously, of course, but there has to be a proper investigation and then go from there, surely.
Yes, but on the other hand, and counter to what I've just said, Red Tractor could be completely irrelevant in all this anyway, because if the customers of Freshways, who are now its purchaser, say, we don't want milk from that farm, then the farm's finished anyway, because nobody else is going to pick milk up from it.
That's the big problem. I mean, Freshways took a fair battering in this one. And that's where, for me, things change. Because, you know, Freshways have attracted some bad press over the last couple of years. And some of the bad press has been annoying, amusing, you know, gold cars, roulette chips, etc. Hit the press with the Daily Mail. The problem with this is that this was about milk going into Freshways cartons. That's the difference. And they will find it very, very difficult and challenging to appease their customers, because they won't want to be involved in this. And this is where I am on two responses. One is, I'm not in PR, and we've got two people in here who do PR, right? But I did question Freshway's response in terms of questioning, criticising what Abby said about the price they'd paid, and then backing it up with Stephen Bradley's milkprices.com. What I'd have rather seen Freshways do is come out and say, this is unacceptable, and this is what we're going to do about it. Equally, the farmer and his family, you know, I do feel for them, that they'll have had a battering and will continue to get a battering, you know, and I do feel for them, but they've been involved in, you only need to go on the web to find that some of the positive publicity they've had. They've been in business 45 years as a family, but I think they should have come out with something, a statement, that as to what they were doing and what had happened with those staff. So I think the two of them missed an opportunity to say straight out, right, this is unacceptable, and this is what we've done, this is the remedy, instead of either hiding or challenging the people that were on the programme.
I would completely agree. As far as the farm is concerned, I would imagine that that farm is being advised by lawyers. That farm should be advised by somebody in public relations in conjunction with lawyers. As for Red Tractor, well, I think I would have done their PR differently. I've had half a career in PR, and I would have done that differently as well. But as far as the farmer is concerned, he should be taking some PR advice. He should come out with a statement, come out with an apology, and and try and get on. He won't get on the front foot, but he needs to. He needs to stress his case. For all we know, and I think it's unlikely, but for all we know, that farmer could have been in intensive care in hospital with COVID for 3 months while the filming was taking place. We don't know that because we have not heard his side of the story, and everybody is making judgments from the Panorama program and Red Tractor's response. It's one side of a two-sided debate. And I know that I may come across as an apologist, but that farmer has a right to a defence, and we have not heard that defence.
I would actually endorse what you said, Chris. I don't think you're an apologist. I think you've verbalised some brilliant points. And I suppose our issue was that you've got to accept that that's the world we're in, and the BBC, whatever you say, that's what we're dealing with. And we've always got people around trying to pull down the industry. And so therefore, we've got to have high standards. And one of the things I just pick up on with Ian is there are milk buyers out there, and I have it said to me from farmers, oh, I'll go to so-and-so because actually they don't bother with their standards. You know, it's a lot easier to sell to them. Well, of course, as soon as you've set that in train, you can blame the consumers, and you can say, oh, well, consumers don't pay enough and all of that, and I take all of that. But, you know, there's a problem endemic in the industry when some processors take the view, well, we don't push things and we don't have high standards, so you can come to us.
Yeah, and that's a function of a race to the bottom on prices, John.
Totally, totally. And that is actually what is damaging to the industry. And I'm thinking about the damage to the industry. That's where I'm coming at it today from.
In the last 10 days, I have had a farmer contact me and tell me that his choice of milk buyer, and he changes within the next few weeks, is not based on price, but is based on the standards that the purchaser requires, and that particular purchaser requires lower standards. You then look, can I just tell you one opposite that we've overlooked, and that is I always say now that, you know, if Arla sneezes, everyone catches a cold. You know, everyone will be waiting for Arla's milk price next week, and it will go up. And when it does go up, everybody else will have to fall into line, whether we like it or not. Now, Arla under 365 have got cameras.
The cameras thing, yeah.
Like the carving areas, like the parlour.
Yeah.
They're the key areas that they've got cameras in. Maybe we're going to have to go that way. And Arla pay nearly a penny premium for people that are on 365. But that was the bit I tried to make to Panorama, is that, you know, several processors are stepping up with improvements and are working with farmers. And maybe cameras are not popular on farms, but goodness me, I can tell you, your behaviour changes when you know there are cameras watching you all the time. And I'm not saying that those workers on that farm would have completely changed, but I do believe their behaviour would have changed if they'd been on camera 24/7.
I completely agree. Every farm that values its future and its reputation should have CCTV cameras fitted. And what they're going to cost, 10 grand?
Yeah.
Well, that's a day's milk for this bloke.
No, it's nowhere near that. There are a lot of
cheaper now. $3,000 or $4,000.
Well, that's half a day's milk for the farm we're talking about.
Yeah, because I would come in on this is that we've dealt with cases where people have had issues in the past. And when one of the things we run is an integrity training program, and you go with the farm staff, and you actually help them understand all the issues. And one of the key things you tell them and you help them with is, imagine you've got a camera on your shoulder all day long. And you've got to get into that psychology that is how you, some of the clients we operate with who are very, very concerned about their standards, that's how they think. They see it like that. And that 360 program that Arla run is part of it. And we had the questions for the Panorama. And interestingly, they didn't pick on any of the major buyers, did they? Because actually, we assure we can make it clear that all the major buyers actually are pretty good. That isn't to say they won't have skeletons in the cupboard, but they've actually doing a lot about this. So I think it goes along the supply chain.
Freshways has a reputation of having a low base and a low bar, and I don't think it's got a long-term future unless it addresses that reputation, because its customers are going to want higher and higher standards and a reassurance that this isn't going to happen again.
And let's go back to Chris's comments on Red Tractor. Let's not forget that Red Tractor in its statement has said that it's prior to that program has made unannounced inspections on that farm. So Red Tractor have been on that farm on several occasions and passed it, the inspector has passed it, has been Red Tractor compliant. Yet suddenly after a Panorama program, the bloke's out of business. That's the point that Chris is making, and I think it's a very valid point. Is it because it was on BBC Panorama? Or you know, where does it have to be, where does it have to appear? And we don't want it to appear anywhere, but there's always going to be problems. We had one of our leading retailers not too long ago, blue chip retailers, that was caught out. You know, there are occasions when someone drops their guard and lets the side down. And where does that have to be aired for someone like Red Tractor to say, we're coming in and coming in hard, and, you know, you are immediately out of business?
Yeah, but there's another point here, Ian, sorry. And this is putting the responsibility as well back on the BBC, because I don't know all the details about how the BBC dealt with Red Tractor. I think there's some questions about that. But the BBC as well, potentially, imagine now if something happened to somebody who was in trouble like this, lost their livelihood, God forbid something terrible happened. Where would the BBC be then in that? The BBC, and I accept your points about its investigative journalism, but with power comes responsibility. And I thought the days of the gibbet were gone. The days when you actually took somebody who was a criminal and put them on the top of the hill in a gibbet to show to the rest of the world what a terrible thing it was to go and commit that crime, I thought they'd gone. And I thought most people in the BBC wouldn't like it. But that's where you end up with when you start to do this sort of thing, because you've got responsibilities when you start to influence people's lives. This is a massively complex subject, isn't it? When you start to think like this, all the moral dimensions in it.
No, completely. And we are really going to have to start to wrap this up soon. But before we do, Chris, you have spoken to the producers. Just on some of John's points there. And I don't know how much of this we can actually bring through as well. But what has there been their sort of response? Was it a job well done?
From their point of view, you want me to put the
yes, please.
Hat of the producer on? I think they are reasonably pleased with the balance that they tried to put across, and they wanted to put across the message that we need to value milk more. I think they were very surprised about what the vet said, what Roger Blowey said. Now, if you look at the social media and the farmer storm, a lot of farmers are blaming Panorama for their one-sided view and the sensationalist approach that they brought to the program. Panorama do not accept that, because they say, well, we interviewed three other people. We interviewed Abby, we interviewed David Griffiths, we interviewed David Finlay at the Ethical Dairy. They say that they put across a balanced program. Now, in some of the scenes, and some of the more distressing scenes to me, for instance, the kicking of the cows and the hip hoist, they asked the vet, the cattle vet, Roger, what he thought of that. And in the case of the hip hoist, he said the practice was widespread around the industry. Panorama were very surprised about that and surprised that he downplayed it. So the farmers that are screaming at Panorama for not saying that the scenes weren't representative of the rest of the industry. Well, the vet didn't say that either. So if the vet didn't say it, why would Panorama? So I think there's that element that's a really important one for farmers to digest. They said, and I know from talking to people who know the farmer, that he seems like a good, decent guy who hired the wrong people. That they were lazy because the farm had a fair bit of kit on it, and they used that kit because they were lazy. So I think Panorama would defend themselves. They weren't allowed to come on this podcast, ironically, because the BBC told them they weren't allowed to. They were freelancers to the BBC. They're not employees of the BBC that made the film. But I'd also add to what Ian said, they did do a lot of fact-finding in advance, and they did give people the opportunity from this industry to have their say. And if people, given that opportunity, didn't say it, then that's not Panorama's issue.
John, can we finish with you? Both, I suppose, what your views on where we go from here in terms of the collaborative industry response, but also maybe to individual farmer listeners out there, they'll probably be thinking, or they'll be thinking what they'll be thinking, what would you advise they could be doing in response to this?
Well, I think you've seen today, I mean, this is a complex issue. You can take stances, but I think you've heard in the programme that there's varying views and you don't want to be on one side. You've got to be balanced in this. The balance I would take out of this is that let's use this as an opportunity for cultural change. Let's actually think about the protect and promote message that we need to undertake as an industry. Let's step up on the protect. Let's train our staff. Let's actually get things in order. And actually, let's move on in a different way in the future and don't tolerate poor standards. And I take the point that Chris has said, but I don't think sometimes you've got to accept responsibility as an owner, that you've got to train your staff and you've got to actually look after your business. And that goes with it. And I think actually that's what we've got to do. We've got to use this as an opportunity to up our game in the industry. Because there are plenty of people who want to pull us down. And if you don't look after yourself, nobody else is going to look after you.
Yeah. The boss, the farmer, has to set the culture and the tone of what is on their farm. And the buck stops with the farmer.
Okay. It's a bit like the Kite podcast, John. The buck stops with you. That's who we have. Sorry. Well, before the BBC, that's what I'm telling the BBC if they ever investigate us. Anyway,
that's who we have. I'm glad you said John and not me. If we're going to have to defend Chris,
I wouldn't drag you in it. That's all we have time for. It's been a really interesting discussion, and obviously, this one's going to rumble on. But let's hope we get some balance. All we have time for, a very big thank you to our guests today, John Allen, Ian Potter and Chris Walkland.
Yes, thank you very much for listening. We'll be back next week when we'll be discussing the Beyond Reset doc with John and Eric. So I hope you can join us then. But until then, it's goodbye from all of us here.